Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Hello, everyone. I'm recording while holding my daughter, so we'll see how this goes. She might chime in. She's being adorable right now. But we're on our way out the door, so we've got to do this quick. Indeed, hon. Well, honestly, she said, I'm glad I wasn't there. This movie sounded kind of boring. Which is funny, because this is supposed to be a summer blockbuster action jammed pack drama. But I tell you what it feels like. It feels like a movie that had been made 75 years ago, where the commies were a metaphor for mole people or vice versa or whatever. And of course, what makes it all the worse is that not only is the science terrible, which we get into, but the movie is just kind of weird and long and way too long, and DJ Qualls is in it. Ugh, you guys know this movie. This is almost a classic that came out in our lifetime for so bad, it's bad, it's bad. So please enjoy as we stomach the core and Aaron Eckhart's drop-dead gorgeousness.
A secret government program known as Project Destiny.
We're building a weapon that could generate targeted seismic events.
Designed to use earthquakes to attack our enemies.
I'm getting a seismic reading.
It was a perfect, untraceable weapon.
Destiny is a go.
Until something went wrong.
That's an electrical superstorm.
Popping up all over the world.
I'll put this as simply as I can. Everybody on Earth is dead in a year.
The core of the Earth has stopped spinning.
The spinning core protects us from cosmic radiation.
Without it, radiation will create superstorms. Microwaves will literally cook our planet.
How could this have happened?
It was Project Destiny. We killed the planet.
So, how do we fix it?
We can't.
The core is the size of Mars. You're talking about jump-starting a planet.
What if we could?
We're here about your legendary ship.
What would it take to get it in 3 months?
$50 billion.
You take a check?
I need you to control the flow of information.
You want me to hack the planet? I'm gonna need Star Trek tapes and Hot Pockets.
You are good.
Is there anything you can't do?
Not that I'm aware of.
You're trying to save the world. It's impossible. I came here to save my wife and children. I just hope I'm brave enough to save three.
I can't wait to get into an untested ship, go to the center of the Earth, and restart its core with 1,000 megatons of nuclear weapons. Then we outrun the biggest shockwave in history.
Hot damn.
San Francisco is in ruins.
The whole West Coast is out.
And it's decaying faster than we thought.
2, 1.
Going in. Get ready to pull fugees.
Whoever goes into the core is not coming back.
We're losing oxygen!
Breach!
Got a job to do. Let's do it.
Tired of listening to the same old music over and over? Are you ready to turn off the radio, give up on your iDevice, or admit your music collection just isn't enough to keep you satisfied? Vigae Dynamics has the answer to your listening needs. Dr. Geek's Laboratory, The Science of Music from Fiction, is a fantastic album now available for download, assimilation, and rejuvenation of your tired old playlists. The album is comprised of music and audio excerpts from the first 2 seasons of the acclaimed show, which chronicles the adventures of Dr. Geek and friends in his fantastic lab. Here at Vigae Dynamics, we feel it is our duty to create eager customers who will devour the inventions, creations, and various other offerings of the good doctor and his lab staff. The album is currently available to download from iTunes, Amazon, CDBaby.com, and all your other retail favorites. Physical CDs of Dr. Geek's Laboratory, The Science of Music from Fiction, will be available in December, just in time for your holiday shopping needs. Vigae Dynamics, bringing you the music of tomorrow, today.
I guess, wooga, wooga. This is my opening of Independent Childhood, and the world is ending.
We're taking a train straight to the core.
Yeah, right? see, the thing is, when I tried to do jokes for these, they're not funny, A, but B, this movie isn't funny. It's tragic. This is like doing homework, but homework you feel good doing. We watched 2003's The Core, and you are smarter than it. I'm Nick Hoffman, editor-in-chief of Dude Letter and head of Dude Letter Podcasting, and on panel we have...
Hello, this is Daniel, and I have dug my way to China.
And this is Thomas Herman of the Brothers Herman and the Geekly Oddcast.
So, this was an audible. None of us wanted to say that this was our childhood movie. I'd seen bits of it. You know, now the thing is...
I saw it in theaters.
You saw it in theaters?
I saw it in theaters.
I worked in a movie theater in 2003, and I saw the posters and just not a lot of happy people leaving it.
Oh, this was my first time. Honestly, this was awful.
Was it as good for you as it was for the core?
We can get to the phallic imagery later. So we don't necessarily have a lot of warm, fuzzy thoughts about it, but maybe, as someone who listens to a lot of movie podcasts, at least I do, this is one that's always held up as a bad, bad, bad movie.
34% on Rotten Tomatoes and 43% among fans. Like, it's...
I heard a story once that Aaron Eckhart, this was back when Blockbuster still existed, was in an L.A. Blockbuster, found somebody who was about to rent The Core, and actually talked him out of renting The Core.
That's amazing. But we should get a little bit into this movie before we kind of... Well, I guess go from there. Daniel, will you give us our synopsis?
Sure. Aaron Eckhart is in this movie as a geologist who knows all about the Earth's core, which is a good thing because apparently the world is going to end. The Earth's core has stopped spinning, even though the Earth is still rotating, and that's somehow going to destroy the electromagnetic field around the planet, which is going to destroy the atmosphere, which is going to cook us all alive. So he assembles a crew with the help of the U.S. government that includes Hilary Swank as some sort of shuttle pilot, and a token minority, and Stanley Tucci as the know-it-all scientist who is trying his best to pretend like this is his audition tape to be Snape. So they all go with this new ship that's going to drill all the way down in the core and help restart it and save the day.
Very good. So this movie is notorious for being bad about science and everything, and you might think, well, that's just a bunch of science nerds at colleges telling us science. Ivory Tower scientists is what it is.
That's one of the best Charlton Heston impersonations I've ever heard.
Thank you.
You darn scientists, you science tower. No,
you can
have my science when you pull it from my cold, dead fingers.
Take your stupid science off me, you damn dirty scientists.
I mean, there's even, like, legends and rumors of, like, universities who show this in science classes and have people, like, you know, do the, you know, Ebert thing and pausing it whenever there's an inaccuracy and it takes weeks.
I've heard NASA puts this and Armageddon up together. It's like, okay, you want to get work here? Point out all the inaccuracies in these movies.
Go. Yeah. Why not? I mean, it's perfect. It's wonderful. Like, it's wonderful for that because off the bat, it's unwatchable.
I don't even know much about science. The most I know is if I hold something and drop it, it goes down. And even I knew that they were making some huge mistakes.
Okay, so what I can state from the initial premise, and it's where you can kind of give a little leap with science fiction movie, it is fiction. You get, as Nick has pointed out in many previous podcasts, you get one big break that you get to have. This movie decides to take many of them, and that's part of its problem. But the rotation of the core is part of why we have a magnetic field. That magnetic field does protect us from a great many things. This is all correct. If it were to stop, it would be catastrophic, not in a couple months, not in a year. It would be catastrophic immediately.
Yeah.
So if they said it's starting to slow down, then yeah, that would be cause for alarm. And then you could say you have a year timeline. But we can give them that one. It's where they go from there.
Although in terms of catastrophe, they keep talking about the sun's microwaves cooking the planet. The sun doesn't – it has UV rays, right? It doesn't have
Well, I mean, there's
solar winds and yeah. such as that. They would be bad.
But again, that's a much later problem that we'd have to deal with because they don't flare constantly.
Right. Can we talk about Hilary Swank's grease pen navigational fix on the fly?
Oh, my God. Okay.
Literally.
So the opening part of this movie is a montage of – four events of, like, the world falling apart.
So people dropping dead.
Which, okay.
It starts with a banker dropping dead as he's about to speak in some important meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we have Checky Cario and Aaron Eckhart who are called to the scene, but we can get there in a second.
We have the birds.
We have the birds who are flying into Taurus, which is hilarious.
I've been to Trafalgar Square, and the birds really are just a bunch of wankers there.
I believe it. And then we have the shuttle coming down from space.
This came out a few months after the Columbia disaster. Do you remember that?
Yes,
oh,
I do.
I didn't realize that was... Oh, wow.
Yeah, no, this was poorly timed across the board. And the GPS on the space shuttle is off, and so the automated system has it casually off base. This movie desperately wants to be a Roland Emmerich film or something, because it just destroys every landmark it could.
It so badly wants to be a Michael Bay movie,
it
which
does.
Isn't something necessarily to aspire to.
Yeah, it's a John Emile movie.
Is it his only movie?
I sure hope so, but I doubt
think
it.
He directed some TV after this.
He has a big movie coming out later this year called The Poisoners, so there's that. He did Copycat. Oh, wow. Never mind. That's also awful, but yeah, that's an oh, wow moment. But this movie is completely, completely baffling. Very early on, we're introduced to, I don't even remember
his
character.
He did The Man who Knew Too Little.
Did he really?
He directed.
He did do The Man Who Knew Too Little. That was good.
That was good.
That's Bill Murray, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. It's a weird movie, but it's kind of a funny movie.
Yeah.
Do you think that's what, that was his, like, what, his sizzle reel? Because it was a few years before. It was like 5 years before. That's
yeah.
funny. So we have a, God, what do you want to call him? His name is Josh something. He's a professor. His name is Aaron, he's played by Aaron Eckhart. He is the smartest guy who's ever been written.
He speaks five languages, actually.
Oh, please. No, that's Stanley Tucci.
Yeah,
we'll get to him.
So we're going to call the professor our Indiana Jones, because that's kind of what we're...
Yeah. We're introduced to Aaron Eckhart's character playing a trumpet at a piece of granite.
Yeah.
Because...
Jazz hates rock, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, he's trying to show, like, how acoustic waves and blah, 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 blah.
Because he's a geological physicist. That's a thing.
Yeah, and so he's called away because of the heart attacks we were seeing and people crashing into things. And all of a sudden, he runs into his buddy Serge, who is played by Checky Cario, a French actor, who is struggling with his accent this whole movie because they wrote him the hardest part. I don't even know what to say. They end up in a room filled with bodies, and he immediately figures out what killed all these people.
Before even removing the sheet.
Yep. A hand grabs his thigh, which dead people shouldn't do, but, you know, it happens, because it's a plot. And a general, who's general asshole, like all generals are, General Purcell, who's played by Richard Jenkins, says, 1 minute, better than I thought. Because apparently Aaron Eckhart knows everything about everything, and Stanley Tucci is an asshole. That's all I got. I mean, this movie is awful.
So basically, this one scene sends Eckhart's character off into, gets all his postdoc students, no, his doctoral students, to do all this stuff. And they're like, well, da-da-da-da-da. And it's like all blind, stupid. But he basically pulls us all together and realizes we're all doomed.
Yeah.
That's even what he says. He's like, yeah, we're all going to die.
Yeah.
Well, right. And like the general calls him and Checky Cario out because... the idea is we need to make sure this isn't a weapon. Fine, that makes sense. But then he says, wait, aren't you concerned at all why the magnetic pulse of the Earth is killing people? And he goes, nope. What?
There was like 20 bodies in that room. What?
Oh, it was an airplane hangar filled with bodies. There's 100 bodies. And the other thing.
This is happening all over the world because we see, I think, New York and Trafalgar Square. How did they get all the bodies in one place?
Well,
is there something we're not seeing?
Bullshit number two is that different things are happening around the world. Because this is, I think, particularly New York or Boston. And then the birds happen in London.
Yeah, but that wouldn't even work because, yes, there is truth that birds may use magnetic fields to determine where they go. But birds aren't blind.
Yes.
They still wouldn't be flying through windows like that.
If you like to see puppets thrown, this is a bunch of birds being thrown into columns and into walls.
It reminded me so much of Birdemic, except somehow with worse effects.
This is This is amazing. And we didn't even talk about how Hilary Swank ends up becoming part of this movie. She's in an airplane with Bruce Greenwood, right?
It's a space shuttle.
Space shuttle. And when the space shuttle loses its GPS, it ends up in the heart of L.A. because it couldn't just be off and in the middle of the desert. No. It's in the heart of L.A.
In the water base. Yes.
And so they decide to land it because they can't land. It's L.A.
And she figures it out using a paper map and a grease pen, and she figures this out. And I'm like, no, I'm sorry, no.
And you have to understand this, first of all, because it's not just that, oh, we can land here instead. They're landing. L.A. is visible. And I don't know if you've ever been, say, in an airplane like a person, but if I were in the sky, I couldn't say, oh, we could land here instead. And when people do it, it's miraculous. Sully Sullenberger is a hero. He's going to be Tom Hanks in about 6 months.
Yes.
The fact is, they're in the space shuttle, which moves much faster than a 747.
It has no way to brake, really.
It has no way to brake, really. And they land in the L.A. River with one of the worst tropes. This movie is filled with tropes, but this was made in 2003, which is 5 years too late at least. But there's a guy with headphones on, and he can't hear the space shuttle crashing behind him. So he's just there. He's there tightening a bolt or something.
This joke was old when Silver Streak came out.
It's like, oh, young people just don't hear a thing. Oh, my God, this movie.
We haven't even gotten into the worst part, really, which is right after they introduce the guy who's like, what if we could get to the Earth? And it's that guy in the middle of the desert with, I kid you not, unobtainium.
Okay, so we should...
James Cameron is stealing from this movie, and that makes it so much worse.
We need to catch the plot up, because all the plot happens in the first half hour. This is a B-movie that came out too late, right? Mm. This is literally a Roger Corman film. But yeah. So what happens is all this stuff is happening, and it's clearly getting worse. And so Aaron Eckhart, Josh... runs over to Stanley Tucci, who's this celebrity scientist, literally in the way that Neil deGrasse Tyson is, because people are running up for his autograph and there's paparazzi.
Oh no, there's a girl. He's like, make sure you give your number to my agent or something like that. It was like literally, there's a meeting happening later.
I can picture Neil deGrasse Tyson doing that. Let's be honest.
And Tucci with a great wig. Because the man is as bald as a newborn babe, but man,
he pulls off some great wigs.
He has a wig guy. Because I mean, Nick Cage gets shitty wigs. This is a world class wig that is holding on for dear life when he gets punched in the face. But we'll get to him getting punched in the face later. But you know, he goes, Josh shows up with these numbers. He says the world is not spinning properly, and Tucci's like, oh, I would have caught this. But it turns out he's wrong. The world is slow, the core is stopping at spinning. That's why shit is going badly. And, in fact, we then see him pull a very suspicious top secret envelope out of a file. And then they have this giant meeting. Now, the meeting is weird, right? The meeting is top scientists saying, well, what can we do about it? Well, Stanley Tucci decides we can make it to the center of the Earth, even though the furthest at this point we've gotten is
7 miles, I think they say.
Yes. And then we start our gathering the heroes montage.
I did like that one line in that bit where they're like going, space is easy, it's empty, getting to the core is hard.
Yeah, that was good. Although they do have the stupidest metaphor ever, where they cut that peach in half.
That's actually not bad for the planet.
Well, Daniel, do you have some air freshener? And then they send the guy off to get an air freshener. And Stanley Tucci immediately knows what he's doing, right? He goes, yes, and he grabs the thing on a fork. And
I love how they're all contemplating it for 5 minutes afterwards. Like, my word, this peach, it wasn't burned before, now it is. My word. How could this happen?
And so we get all the stakes in the first 10 minutes. I mean, literally, it's the same plot as, what is it, Fantastic Voyage, where they shrink the guy down.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, it's that kind of a thing. We have a sci-fi ship. The front of the ship doesn't really ever look like much. They're looking out into this magical CGI screen that Aaron Eckhart's character creates.
This just wide open view. It's weird.
And, everything is explained when they show up at what's his name? Who's the
White Sands, Utah? The guy out in
What is his name?
Yeah,
the token minority.
Yeah, that's I'm trying not to be.
Well, that's the role he serves.
Yeah,
Brazelton.
No. Brazelton.
Brazelton.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the thing about Brazelton as a character, Braz, is that he is. He's invented apparently everything ever, including something called unobtainium. Oh. He says the real word has 37 syllables, so I've been calling it unobtainium. Now, the effect to show how strong it is weird. He has a giant laser. It's Delroy Lindo.
Oh, yeah.
It's Delroy Lindo playing Brazelton. Thank you.
Okay,
And what it does is he shows this box made of unobtainium that he blasts with the laser that using to cut through the core of the Earth.
Which has a mouse in it.
And
named
the
Alex.
And the mouse is fine. That mouse has more characteristics than Greenwood. Than Bruce Greenwood's character, the captain who dies in the first 10 minutes.
I remember when I first saw this, I'm like, oh, it's that guy that played John F. Kennedy in 13 Days, if you remember that movie. And then I'm like, he's pretty much doing the exact same performance this go around.
He played the president in the second National Treasure movie.
Yes, he did.
He did.
Why don't we just elect him so we can do it for real?
Oh my! It'd be like saying we should elect Aaron Eckhart in case Black Hawk, or what was it? London Has Fallen or Olympus Has Fallen,
oh, yeah.
Or like that movie ever takes place. Okay. So we finally end up with an unobtainium and a laser, and we have a scene very similar to. Well, I guess Independence Day Resurgence, where he's like, well, how soon can you make a whole ship out of that? He goes, well, if you had $15 billion, he goes, do you take a check?
Oh, you should use a credit card, get the miles. You're like, that's not how credit cards work. But sure.
Well, and again, it's Aaron Eckhart being funny, and that's the problem. He's the only one, well, him and Tooch are the only ones with any charisma, and the thing is, Tooch is supposed to be an asshole, which he plays very well, but that doesn't make him interesting. None of these people are interesting.
Aaron Eckhart's usually funny too. He was great in Thank You for Smoking.
He is. I mean, he can deliver a stiff jawed one liner, mm-hmm. right? None of that here. None of that because he plays. If you're writing a character, don't make him too smart. And I mean that he needs to have problems. He needs to have other people helping him. He needs to have flaws. Aaron Eckhart knows everything about everything. He fixes every problem. He realizes others' mistakes before they happen. That makes him uncompelling, guys. And I promise this, it's the same reason why if you didn't have Tom Hanks in all those awful Dan Brown movies, he'd be even more unwatchable because Tom Hanks's inflection makes him a flawed character. He's like, I just don't understand. And then he'll figure things out. Mm-hmm. Aaron Eckhart here is too handsome and too good at his job. I don't care. In fact, the thing I kept saying to my wife, why don't they do the Apollo 13 thing where one of them isn't on the ship so that when they get into trouble, someone can help? All the important people are on the ship. There's no need for anyone. Why aren't there better astronauts and scientists and engineers fixing the ship? Everything falls apart and then we just die. Like if Delroy Lindo was on the ship, it makes sense because it's his ship, it's his baby. Tucci is not the kind of person who's going to risk his life for any of this stuff. He should be up there in space telling them to kill these people and move on. Tucci is completely uncompelling. Go ahead, Dan. I'm sorry.
No, that was pretty much it. I mean, you need somebody up there who can balance it out and to actually counterbalance the stakes. There are no stakes in this movie.
Well, it's like Gary Sinise in Apollo 13,
right?
Because
exactly.
Like Kevin Bacon comes in at the last minute because they're afraid that measles is going to break out, right?
I met Charlie Duke once. I just want to...
Oh, the real one?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Cool.
That's actually so cool. That's better than anything in this movie. No, I'm with you. But Oh, and you know what? We haven't even talked about the least compelling character, Rat, played by DJ Qualls.
Oh, I still think that goes to Hilary Swank, but sure.
Well, at least she has
annoying.
Well, she has a purpose, though. The whole thing is we need a hacker to make sure that this news doesn't get out about whatever.
We need a geeky white boy with a big nose.
Who doesn't know how cell phones work.
The biggest nose I have ever seen. Ever, yeah. ever. And is it a prosthetic? Because he has a big nose. Maybe they intentionally underlined it so it looks even bigger. But this thing, I'm looking at the IMDb Gazette or whatever here, and it doesn't look like... It's a big nose. It is a big nose. He has the biggest nose I've ever seen.
Well, he can't help that.
No, he can't. Well, I mean, I guess technically he could. but they want him to be... His character's name is Rat. We meet him during an FBI raid.
And he gets paid in Hot Pockets and Xena tapes for his services. Which I think this is the last time Xena was ever referenced anywhere.
We're going to encourage your masturbation in Hot Pocket fantasy as long as you hack the world
He literally says the phrase, hack the world. The problem is, they want to make sure that news about what's going on doesn't leak out. Problem is, leave it alone. Just don't tell anyone. That's not, it's not hard. It's 2003. Like, what this would have been in 10 years is a WikiLeaks scenario, but not at the time.
And the way he goes about it is what? He builds a virus to scrub any reference to certain keywords. That tends not to really work out too well because those keywords don't necessarily correspond to the information you're looking for.
Yes.
I also, it's just one of those things. Like, again, if this movie came out in 1995, it's like hackers. Like, it's where people don't really understand hacking.
The net.
Right. This is what it is. It's like where you don't really understand technology, but computers are things. We should deal with them.
Oh, what was that terrible movie where Hugh Jackman has to hack a computer?
Swordfish.
That was it.
But, I mean, it's like that. But this is 2003. It'd be like going back in time and saying, but what if they have AOL keywords? Can we deal with AOL keywords?
No. Wasn't that actually a line of dialogue? Because I swear that was actually a line of dialogue in this movie.
I have a co-writing credit on this, on the core. But yeah, man, like, so now it's just a matter of, like, then it becomes Fantastic Voyage. Then they're drilling through the Earth with their giant penis ship. Six segments ribbed for her pleasure. And what they are going to do is go from through the crust to the mantle, through the inner or the outer core, and then set off nukes in the outer core to get the inner core spinning.
Wait, wasn't setting off nukes in the core a Dr. Evil plan, like, before this movie came out?
I believe it was.
Like, wasn't that supposed to do...
It would blow up every volcano on the planet.
That's what I was thinking. Like, isn't this a bad thing?
Oh my god. That makes the third act reveal so much more sense. So the third act reveal is that there's a thing called Project Destiny, which is...
Destiny! Destiny! No escaping! That's for me, Destiny!
Don't reference a good movie right now.
But the whole idea is that it's a project which sends ... into the center of the Earth to cause earthquakes to happen on our enemies' capitals or whatever, right? And there was this legend that our enemies were developing such a project. So you're saying that someone slipped in Austin Powers 2, and the general said, my God, they're years ahead of us. And then that was it? Because that seems like what they're... I'm not going to argue with you. That makes as much sense as the rest of this movie. Because we have a general who's evil for no reason, and it's like, you know, it's the cribbed shorthand of a military-industrial complex like an Iron Man movie. But the problem is, there's literally no motivation for this.
Why does that weapon even exist? Like, what were they targeting?
Well, no, so they basically said that an enemy power, so we're assuming China or Russia, has to be the only ones with enough, you know, capital to do it,
yeah,
built this same weapon on the other side of the planet to use on us.
So this is Dr. Strangelove. That's what this is.
But I mean, to Thomas's point earlier, what they should have done is, because the whole idea is that Project Destiny probably was the thing that stopped the core of the Earth.
Yes.
And they're saying, well, what if we tried it again? We could just, you know, kickstart it or something, whatever.
Well, I remember this because they use the analogy like a defibrillator. If a shock of electricity can stop a beating heart, you can start it. That's not how defibrillators
work. It's not.
The whole point is that the heart is beating out of control and you're just...
stopping it and hoping it restarts in control.
But, like, the thing is, that plot point doesn't help. Because, like, if that becomes the plot, then the general should get his comeuppance. Someone should, you know, there should be repercussions. So what it should be is, my God, we tested Destiny and did this. We need to fix this before the repercussions happen or something. And then the general gets his comeuppance at the end. But here it's just like, we didn't tell anybody this happened and it happened. And apparently Stanley Tucci was the one who designed it, but he gets numbers wrong all the time, as we learn later, so clearly shit was going to go wrong. This makes no sense, guys. This plot is awful.
Before they got to the core and started drilling, and we find out about this Project Destiny, we're treated to a scene in Rome, which has the worst CGI I've ever seen.
I was in that square, though.
Yeah, I've been there, too. Yeah.
It was, actually, I take that back, the second worst. It wasn't quite as bad as Spawn, but we're getting into Spawn territory.
Oh, no. It's the second worst in this movie because the one in San Francisco is right up. So the one so we have a bunch of Italians doing we have tourists taking pictures and Italians doing Italian things like
drinking cappuccino and watching soccer.
Yeah, exactly right. And then all of a sudden there's a superstorm.
which DJ Qualls detects because his nose can just smell these things. But what happens is lightning just starts appearing everywhere. So the guy who goes to try to fix the TV and the woman who is at the giant espresso machine both get electrocuted. And then all of a sudden, shit goes
down.
I'm just
thinking, do you think his nose is like Amanda Seyfried's boobs in Mean Girls where he can detect the weather if it's already happening?
That would be the greatest thing. There's an 80% chance that a superstorm is arriving. That was the best part of Mean Girls.
So the San Francisco scene...
Oh my God.
The Golden Gate Bridge. So once again,
we have shtick, but
none of us are engineers, none of us are scientists. But suspension bridges work by you're pulling back because the weight pulling down the middle, and you've got weight being pulled out to the sides.
Yeah.
If you remove the middle of the bridge, the two pillars are going to start leaning outward, not inward.
Well, okay,
more so than that, microwaves from the sun are hot enough, even though microwaves don't exist, to melt the bridge, but not the cars on the bridge.
Well, and then number two, there's a guy doing shtick here, which we have to talk about. So what happens is they argue that the magnetic field is going to break down, which, I mean, yes, we do have a magnetic field, et cetera, like Daniel said. Beams are going to be blasted at the planet. And rather than this happening everywhere at once, or since it's a field at the tops or near the middle where the field would be weakest, it happens at one specific spot. And that specific spot, again, not the middle of the ocean, happens to be in the San Francisco Bay. So there's a guy who's in his car, and his arm is just leaning out the window, and it's a little toasty. And he gets this incredible, fourth degree sunburn all of a sudden. But
yeah, that was...
there's no other side effects right away, even though the fact that his arm is literally boiling when he pulls it into the car.
He pulls it in quickly, but wouldn't his skin be falling off after that?
But B, it's one thing to get a sunburn. It's another thing to have this. And if that's happening to people instantly is the idea, the biker that we see driving past him would have burst into flames.
It's like, hey, you've got melanoma, and you're on fire.
The windshield glass would have cracked, because apparently there's an old wives' tale that if you leave your windows all closed on a hot day, your windows, it's never happened to me. But if it's hot enough to boil a man's arm at 100,000 degrees, it's going to... So, but this is the slowest. And then he looks up, which the San Francisco Bay Bridge, or the Golden Gate Bridge does not have two layers. The Bay Bridge does, so they got that wrong. But he looks up, and the sky above him is literally boiling. Then, out of nowhere, which we don't get explained either, but the power grid ends up going out because there's one giant power grid in California, Washington.
A substation, potentially. I mean,
but
it's those Enron traders, they were screwing up the California power system.
Not 30 plants, but five states go off the grid, and then they say, my God. If we need to power up Destiny, we need to take all the electricity away from every other state to power up Destiny. Which, if that's the case, we would have noticed Destiny earlier.
Also, it's in Alaska, right, Destiny? How is it taking power from the U.S. mainland?
It's not how anything works.
No.
They would just have a nuclear reactor or something for it, but if it needs to take power from 48 other states, or whatever it is, 45 other states... It's just not going to work. That's not how anything works, guys. Again, Daniel said, there's this rule that Steve Martin says, you have the craziest thing off the top, you can build from there, but you can't get more, you can't hold any more disbelief. Everything about this movie is suspension of disbelief, and then by the end, you're losing penis segments in the core of the Earth to set off nukes, and you're just like, this is the most believable thing, and I just can't be bothered anymore.
Well, that's the thing, though, is when they're actually drilling through the planet and then they encounter that giant geode that's underground, which, whatever, I can buy that. It might not be scientifically accurate, whatever.
It's potential that something like B-level, that does exist, yes.
B-level science fiction has done way worse, and I've gone with it. But there's no emotional stakes to it. I mean, they're just sort of going out and looking at it. It's all slacked on. It's like, wow, this is beautiful. And it's like, guys, the world is ending.
Can I just say, if you're going to send something... through the earth, you're going to go down it, you're going to go dig down deep. I would think it would be much more thrilling, entertaining, and interesting to never show the outside. You're literally five guys in a tube, and it's darkness all around you, and occasionally you just see it burrowing through crust or magma, and you just get a brief glimpse of it, and it continues. Almost
kind of like Sunshine, that Danny Boyle movie?
Yeah, or even like, you know, Go Hunt for Red October, where, yeah, occasionally you see the sub going around, but mostly it's, you're in the sub. You're in it, and just kind of get a more engaging, you're stuck in here, and could have done something with that, like somebody having claustrophobia, but they had to be there. Like, that would have been great for Eckhart's character. He has all this knowledge. He's a claustrophobic.
Yeah. Like, but they want him there, but there's some character flaw.
Yes.
He has no character
flaw. Like, that would have been a great character flaw.
He also heals like Wolverine, but we can get to that at the end.
Oh, Serge? He also has a challenge with getting out of rooms that are being crushed.
Oh, with time to spare.
Yeah, so I guess to raise the state, Delroy Lindo's ship, which he calls, Virgil, which is clever.
Yes.
Because Virgil's the one who leads Dante into hell. Like, that's clever. Yeah, okay, fine.
That's not really all that clever. But
but it's the best part about the movie. Okay. So
it's the cleverest thing they did.
They have all these different segments because, which of course don't matter because they succeed in the mission without the segment. So like it doesn't matter. Like it'd be wonderful if they lost a segment and then it had any stakes, but they don't. So whatever. I forgot where I was going with this rant. Anyway, regardless, Delroy Lindo ends up sacrificing himself by melting, which is kind of funny. We lose characters a lot. First, we lose Bruce Greenwood because the ship runs aground. Like you said, there was a giant air pocket, which they didn't expect. It ends up in this beautiful kind of geode, which they drill into and then only realize later, hey, we cut a hole in the side of the geode. Oh, shit, it's leaking magma. But that's another thing. They have to cut. When they land, a thing gets stuck inside the spinny laser. I don't know how lasers work. I didn't realize they had to spin, but this one does. Whatever. And so I have to cut the geode free. He dies because a little shard drills him through the helmet when it falls. Part of me wondered if this wasn't like Survivor, and they're just like, you have been voted off the movie. Also, part of me wonders if Bruce Greenwood didn't say, I'm done.
I'm out.
It'll give What's-Her-Name a chance to redeem herself.
But... I did like that little detail where after the shard hit Bruce Greenwood's head, it went back and to the left. it really didn't. I just didn't exist.
Although the blood coming out his nose did look reminiscent. They leave the body behind. Isn't this also where Aaron Eckhart switches over his oxygen supply so Delroy Lindo could keep cutting?
Oh, yeah.
And he heals magically. Like, he just comes back to life after, like, 6 seconds of oxygen because...
They pull him in and he's just like, I'm okay.
I'm okay. He eventually also burns his hands, which is just awful. Delroy Lindo is... They realize that they don't have enough nukes. Well, Serge dies because he's crushed to death.
What exactly happened? Virgil got damaged somehow?
Well, they were flying through a field of diamonds that were the size of Cape Cod.
That's right.
And Hilary Swank clipped one, even though she thought she was free. This scene bothered me for two reasons. First of all, they're flying through Cape Cod-sized diamonds. And so she's whipping around these things. She's trying to fly around. Like, again, she's playing a giant game of Snake or something. Thing is... In the back of the ship, Serge Eckhart and Delroy Lindo are Checky Cario. I keep saying his character's name because Serge is easier than Checky Cario. There's a lot of unnecessary consonants there. they're setting up the nukes and starting the timers, which is 9 segments back, but we forget about that later. The hull is breached by a chunk of diamond, and Delroy Lindo has set up the ship to automatically close off breaches in individual segments. Plot device. So we slowly watch Checky Cario get crushed to death like a tin can, and we have one of my favorite scenes ever, not because it's well done, but because Aaron Eckhart has a world-class tizzy. He's like, yeah, you should have opened the bulkhead, you should have ever read it. You just watched him die. I was right there. And he's blubbering and yelling at Hilary Swank. And
I had to make a choice.
And she doesn't even try to override the switches, which, frankly, was probably the right decision. But his tizzy. Oh, my goodness. He's having a tizzy. And then Stanley Tucci, 3 scenes later, gets to have a tizzy where he's trying to decide whether or not to let the nukes go off. Right?
Yep.
So Checky Cario goes back to get his picture of his daughter, like his notebooks and his stuff, which we don't. We don't know why he wants to go back to sacrifice himself, but he crushes like a tin can. But we get the nukes out somehow, which they don't explain either.
Especially when it's later revealed how heavy they are.
Yes. And, yeah. this movie just keeps getting worse and worse. Thomas, you haven't said anything in a while. You've got your hand, your head is in your hands. You feel worse.
I'm like, I'm reliving something. Like, I what was it? I joked after this. So there's 2 hours of my life I'm not getting back. And
yeah, we were watching it just a little out of sync with each other. So we would say something, and they're like, "Oh, have you gotten to this yet?"
Okay. So wait, we just got to. We just passed. You know, the him having his little tizzy fit, and it's like, you know, we could have saved him. It's like, you know, we're trying to save the world. No, not the world, just three. And you're like,
wait, yeah, no, that line was the worst line.
I still don't know what she meant.
No, they should have said, it should have been the opposite way around. We have to survive this. And they're like, no, we're trying to save the world. Like, that's the way the line works.
Yes. And you're like, and somebody, you just have the feeling like she delivered the line wrong so many times. She's just like, screw it, we're going with it. It makes no sense.
Well, but the thing is, like, we don't know about Project Destiny yet and all that. So, like, at this moment, we think we're the only hope. Like, these people who are left, which at this point we have Tooch, we have Delroy and Lindo, we have Swank, and we have Eckhart left. And so we're hoping, like, these are the people, these are the ones who are left who are fighting to the last to save the world.
I always thought a more appropriate line after that little tizzy fit is, Josh, eat a Snickers, you get cranky.
Yes, this is exactly right. I mean, and it's like he just works himself into such a little tizzy. Like, it's so cute. And then at the end, like, the next scene, he's fine. Because they're like, you know, Josh, are you coming? Josh. And he just shows up, sorry, guys, I was asleep. Like, he's fine. He's literally fine. Like, there's nothing. There's no end to this movie.
It's longer than the first. It's longer than Independence Day Resurgence. Not cool. I actually think it's the same length as the first Independence Day.
Okay.
No. Independence Day was a little longer.
I mean, we could talk sci-fi. Like, it's longer than 2001, which I know a lot of people hate. That's fine. How about this? It's longer than Star Wars.
Yes.
Star Wars is 2 hours on the nose. They explain a religion, and they have aliens, and they have everything, and we're fine with it. This movie is just... It just trudges and trudges and trudges.
I'd rather watch Innerspace again. I enjoy that.
Yeah, but the thing is, you enjoy it. I would rather watch Spawn. It's quicker.
I'd rather watch a nail being shoved through my foot many times.
Yeah, but then you don't have to feel it. Did you feel this movie?
Yes.
I could drink. I didn't feel anything by the end.
I should have drank.
Why
didn't I drink?
But, like, I mean, like, then shit keeps happening. They announce, like, oh... Well, we're going to run out of fuel or something. Or they get to the inner core. They realize that the density is wrong. They start speeding up. And they're like, oh, if this number is wrong, then this must be true. Which Tucci said, I'm never wrong before. So he gets his comeuppance early. And they're like, well, that means we're just going to have to reintroduce Destiny. And then they're like, gasp.
Destiny. And he even said it earlier in the movie when he picks up the phone going, Destiny has finally come. And you're like,
Ugh. And so they're like, well, how do we deal with Destiny? What is Destiny? And then Tucci's like, we have to get out of here. Destiny's going to kill us. We'll barely make it as it is. And they're like, well, we have to finish our mission. We can set off these nukes in a different way, blah, 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 blah. And then Tucci has his tizzy, or tissy, or hissy. He has a hissy fit. He's just like, meh, meh. And literally the subtitle said, inaudible grunting.
Yes.
And Delroy Lindo punches him in the face, and it's the best moment of the movie. He gets punched in the face. And then Rat decides he's going to hack the world again, and he hacks
well, he's trying to break into the security protocol with
and
Destiny.
He cries.
Yes,
he starts weeping as though oh my god.
It really emphasized his nose watching the tears come down, and it's kind of disturbing.
Okay, and I have a potato nose myself. I'm fine with that.
Well, this was like a Doug Funny level schnoz that this man has.
And B, the cinematographer is intentionally doing this because his nose is big, but they always film him at like a 3/4 negative 25% angle. So it's like looking up at this nose as though it casts a shadow across the lens.
To quote Rat, the cinematographer's kung fu is no good.
Oh my god, if he said kung fu... And the disc at the end says kung fu!
Yes,
Oh my god,
the gracious. Only entertaining thing he did is when the FBI shows up and he's like wiping everything. And it's
oh my god.
That was entertaining.
He's like, running through, he throws like three hard drives in a toaster.
And he just goes... Nurr.
He microwaves a bunch of CDs. Oh my god.
That was great. That was entertaining.
And his first line is... I know these look like computers, but
they're not
computers. Like, he has nothing. He has no plan B. It's awesome. Regardless,
looks like Manning. He looks like the private. He kind of looks like.
He does indeed. Yes, he does. We also have this moment where Rat goes to Josh. He goes, "Hey, Josh, I got those prime number
magnetic field numbers you're looking for."
And he goes, "Prime numbers, eh?" And he types in prime numbers.
1, 2, 3, 5, 7.
Isn't a prime number.
And then he goes, "Oh, there's something I need to do." And he goes, like, what is destiny? Can I help? It sounds bad. And then he sends back another message, which is never explained. And he goes, can you stall them or something? And so he, again, hacks the world, which is not how things work, but we won't. Thing is, hackers can deal with me later, but a lot of these things are on private networks. They're not attached to the internet. That's not how these things work. Snowden is not this is not Snowden.
Snowden didn't have to hack anything. He works there. He literally just walked into the office.
And this is what people don't understand. Like, this is not magic. No. Hacking is not magic.
Well, no, that was one of the best things in like this most recent season of show Limitless, and the guy learns how to hack, and he goes, and he basically talks to her going, "Everyone thinks hacking is this simple thing. Hacking is boring, long, and arduous. So instead of that, I'm going to do this."
Yeah.
It would have taken more time for him to create his, like, graphic images than the actual hacking. Like, because
you just have to write a program, send the program out, and hope the program works the way you want it to.
Well, I mean, and there's, like you said, there's port sniffing. There's a lot of ways in, and, like, that's not shown, which is good. But at the same time, there's not, like, a magic way to hack the world. That's not how it works. Regardless, at this point, Destiny is slightly delayed. Then they realize, the only way to get the core spinning is to set off a series of nuclear devices around the planet, around the core, rather than all at one go. Okay? They do the math. Tucci gets the math wrong, but that's because he's Stanley Tucci, apparently.
Mm-hmm. You remember when Stanley Tucci played Stanley Kubrick in that Peter Sellers biopic?
Oh, that was great. I loved Tucci is a good character actor, and he's fine in this movie.
Oh, he's great.
He was wearing a fantastic wig in that movie, too.
He's bald. I mean, again, yeah, when you, I mean, it's a nice platform to be on. Maybe that's why Nick Cage always looks so nutty, or Tom Hanks in those Dan Brown movies that we talked about a second ago. Like, you have, when you have too much hair, you can't have a flat platform.
No,
a clean canvas. We've talked longer than this movie deserves. At the end of the day,
hair defines the man.
Yeah. Right. At the end of the day, what happens? Well, they're able to set the nukes off. We lose Delroy Lindo, because in order to make the ship separate on command, he has to go outside. But the heat pressure suits can only take 4,500 degrees, and outside it's 9,000 degrees. And I forget how math works, but if you're in an environment that would kill someone instantly, it doesn't matter if the suit is half as strong. You die.
Yeah. You incinerate.
Also, at the center of the Earth, you're weightless. How is everybody walking around like normal?
Oh, but that would require science. Science doesn't exist here. I also like the idea that they saw 2001. They're like, but in 2001 they could walk because things spun. Ah, but we're not spinning anymore. And they're like, my God, you're right. They're floating. Wait, no, they're not floating. We'll work this out. Regardless, we lose. I'll let you talk about the best joke in the movie. But Stanley Tucci and Aaron Eckhart are trying to load nukes from one place to the other. One way is that they get to the last one, and all of a sudden, driving the ship, Hilary Swank has to swerve to the side, and the nuke falls off its rack and ends up crushing Aaron Eckhart. Mm-hmm. And it looks like he's going to be crushed because Stanley Tucci is a weak, weak man. He's so weak.
Well, he does try and get this massive bomb off rather than just running out of the...
Yes, he does.
He tried to help. He did
try to help, and he goes, I have to leave. And he goes, and Eric goes like, no, you got to help me. He goes, no, I have to leave. And then she has to swerve the other direction. And Eckhart is freed, but Tucci is thrown across the room and knocked out. And then you see the nuke slowly rolling like it's a comedy. Like it's literally like Baby's Day Out or something. Gosh. And like, you know, it's like Home Alone. And all of a sudden you see him like, no! And then his leg gets rolled over. Because apparently, like, it's so funny. So often nukes are taken so carefully. Like, Even in the beginning of the movie, they're taking, like, so cute, like, a hairpin could set off this nuclear device, but here it's just like clang, 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 clang.
I'm pretty sure that is more realistic.
It is more realistic.
It is more realistic, but then they throw away the premise of the first set, which is fine. They turn away every premise ever. The only one that comes back is the solution to this movie, which we'll get to later, when the penis is singing to the whales.
Oh, yeah. I'd forgotten about the whales.
So they separate it off. Stucci's character is left behind. And Eckhart's character needs to find 67 pounds of plutonium, because apparently you can have a variance of at least a pound and still make this work. Realize it's the spent fuel rod. No, it's the fuel rods inside the fission core reactor of this train or giant
penis.
Yeah. And so he tries to pull it out.
Whackety schmackety do.
Phrasing. Phrasing. Are we not doing phrasing?
Just came out. And so
phrasing, Thomas.
This isn't working out very well. And so he basically grabs onto it, but it's too hot. He tries all these, and he finally gets it out, burns his hand.
That's
but
so
apparently
mildly.
His shoulder's working.
Yeah.
And so he manages to get it to the final bomb, and they separate that one off. And so they're getting ready as the bombs are getting ready to finally go. In series, now there's enough fissive material.
And
to make
the
it work.
Whole movie, Tucci has been narrating his next book to a little recorder.
And so Stanley Tucci is lying down in one of the separated shells that's getting set to explode, and he's narrating. He's just talking. And then he pauses, and he looks at it, and it basically goes, what the hell am I doing? And he tosses it away, and he just starts laughing. And it's glorious. And then you see the timer, and it's like 3, 2, 1, boom. And it...
Do you think that was the day that the Tooch just walked off the set?
Yes,
you know,
I think
he was,
so.
He was recording, you know, because his dialogue is literally like, and as though memories are in the, like, we are going through the core of the Earth like the memories of the planet. Like, that's the dialogue. He's, like, literally doing, and he goes just like, he looks at the tape recording and goes, what the fuck am I doing? And he throws it away, and you're just like... Maybe he was just done. It's just like you mentioned Birdemic. It's like the scene in The Room where they're playing football in their tuxes. The guy falls and he goes, that's it, I'm done. And then the actor changes and you're just like, oh no, that was literally the day he was finished filming. The Tooch is just like, are you kidding me?
I'm done.
I'm out.
I'm out.
So the throwing of the recorder was a mic drop.
Yeah, I think so. And then so they
it was an honest laugh.
The so there's no fist of material anymore. The core is starting up. It's the giant penis. The now circumcised penis is adrift, and they decide to tie the power lines to the shell because apparently the shell absorbs heat and turns it into energy. And my thought is, if it can do that, why didn't you start with that? But
yeah, right.
And so they managed to ride the shockwave to the surface.
Have you ever read Journey to the Center of the Earth? It's pretty much that sort of thing, where they just take a volcano all the way up.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, Fly Me to Bermuda, like, is almost this moment. But they land up in Hawaii. And they get out of the mantle, and they land flat like a turd on the bottom of the ocean. And
a metaphor for the movie itself.
And the Navy goes looking for them, but can't find them because they literally look like a giant rock on sonar.
Yeah.
But whales.
Yeah, so in the intro, on the way down, they're using this ultrasonic sonar thing, which is Eckhart's invention, which allows us to see like an MRI machine or a CAT scan or whatever through the planet. And the whales are talking, and Delroy Lindo, as this giant penis, is flying from towards the bottom of the Marianas Trench, goes, we're singing to the whales. And so they turn it back on, and now only Eckhart, and with his burnt hand, show me my hands. I want to see the hands, which are fine because he's able to weld with them like the next scene. And Hilary Swank are left talking about what they want to do first, which involves showering and pizza. They turn it on. The whales start to swim around, and DJ Qualls is the one who goes, the whales, the whales, the whales, the whales. And they figure it out, and they're saved.
And then we get a scene a little later. Rat walking into a cyber bar
wearing a Kangol hat
back then.
Yeah.
And releases all the data of the world that this happened.
because they wanted to keep it classified.
But my question is, why would anybody believe any of that? Like,
right. I mean, like, the thing is, there's a two-pronged problem here. There's actual catastrophic things happening. Like we said, San Francisco and Rome are apparently destroyed. Baltimore has people, or Boston has people dropping dead. And London has birdemic, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's really crazy things happening. And so, at best, these things are confined to Reddit as linked in a conspiracy page, right?
Yeah.
So the fact that you hire Rat already is a plot device. But the thing is, then Rat hacks the CNN teleprompter, apparently, and just says, these people are heroes who have saved the world. Which is really awkward, because Aaron Eckhart's plan is to go back to Youth Chicago and go back to teaching. If you save the world, that's not what your next step is, right? Like, this is a very bizarre end. And again, it means he's hacked the world, me. And him with his goddamn Hot Pockets. Even in the last scene, he has a Hot Pocket.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Anything else you guys want to touch on? Because this movie...
The fact that if you put a Hot Pocket on anything, there's going to be grease stains. And he kept putting Hot Pockets on everything and no grease stains at all. Science. Come on, people. Science.
Right? Yeah. Xena tapes and science. My God. He's playing Pong at one point. I just...
Oh, God.
Sigh. This is the worst movie I've seen in a long time.
Agreed. And it wasn't even a so bad it's good. It was just...
It was trying so hard to be one.
It was.
When I rewatched Armageddon, I'm like, oh, this is terrible, but there's at least some sort of stupid charm about
it. If we're looking at that age of B-movies that came out, I'd rather have sat down and rewatched Sahara, which isn't good, but it's so enjoyable. It's just so bad and funny at the same time.
Sahara is one of those, yeah.
Maybe the problem was it had too much budget, because, like, Sharknado is much funnier than this.
Oh, yes.
And it's not intentional. The first one is not intentionally this funny. That's why the second and third one are kind of like,
Because they're trying too hard.
They're trying too hard.
Yeah.
But, like, anyway, I mean, I think we don't even need to do final judgment, final thought, anything. Like, none of us would recommend this.
No. Well, I just actually looked up Ebert's review of this, and just as a reminder, he was a big fan of Anaconda. He gave that a full 3.5 stars.
Yeah.
He gave this one 2.5 stars. So wow. Leonard Maltin laser blast territory, and his review closes with, if you're bored at the video store and they don't have Anaconda, this will do. I kind of agree with that, but then again, you should really only watch Anaconda if you want to kill yourself. So
this is not a movie to watch on your own.
No.
If you decide you want to see a movie where you guys have a few drinks and you just yell at the screen, that's fine for this, because if you're alone, this is going to frustrate you to no end.
This would have been better had we been, like, live, you know, live chatting or Skyping during it, or even all together, but separate.
Yeah. This should be in the next Riff Tracks live show.
This would be a great Riff Track.
Oh, it would be fantastic.
Because, again, when people are, like, when the Tooch decides it's his scene, he goes. When Eckhart has his little hissy fit... He goes.
So before that hissy fit, I was going to state, like, okay, the writing is atrocious. But I was going to go, all right, at least the actors are trying. And then that hissy fit. And I'm like...
He's like, yeah. Like, he's sniveling. Like, it's amazing.
And then I was just like, all right, it's just too...
There's nothing.
He's gone from first gear to, like, light speed all in the span of 5 seconds.
But, I mean, like, to me, it's really, like, he must be bored or something. Because, like, he's great in Thank You for Smoking. Like, he's a good actor. I like him. I don't think
he made a great Two-Face.
He made a great Two-Face. Exactly.
Like, my wife was more interested in trying to figure out where she recognized people from. But, like, because she would just, like, zone out and be like, is this still happening?
It's like, oh, look, Hunger Games. Okay, next.
Yeah. However, we are finally... We went much longer this than I thought we would because we enjoyed it to talk about more than we enjoyed watching the movie. But, you know, tune in next time. We have some other bad movies coming up, but hopefully they're bad in a fun way because this movie was just all bad, guys. I'm sorry. It was... This is one of the rare ones where you listen to the podcasters and don't waste your time. At least we watched it because it was streaming on Netflix. You know, we didn't lose money, we just lost brain cells. But with that, I think we're out. Bye, guys.
Myopia Defend Your Childhood is produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It's hosted by Nick Hoffman, produced and mixed by Ann Burns, and edited by Nick Hoffman. Our graphic designer is Scott Miller. The theme song is Caroline, written and performed by The Serenaders. purchase their music through the Amazon link on dudeletter.com. Questions or comments? Please visit myopiapodcast.com or contact us through myopiapodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at myopiapodcast and at dudeletter, and find us on our Facebook, Stitcher, and iTunes pages. And while you're on iTunes, please rate and review our podcast. It helps us out a lot. Want to give us money? Go to myopiapodcast.com/Amazon and purchase stuff like normal. Myopia gets a piece of the action.